Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
It's amazing how many more people talk to you based off the name of your polo.
Oh, no question.
I'll tell you what, that is the funniest thing, you know. I mean, because everybody want to talk to you when, you know, you at that high major level, you know, or that real good mid-major level. But when you at a low major level, I mean, people that you talked to before when you was, you know, at a high major, you know, they act like they don't know you. They, you know, whatever the case may be, I find that to be funny, too. You know, I find it to be sad, actually.
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Elwin McCroy, assistant coach at Coastal Carolina. In the intro there, Elwin was talking about how people treat you based on the polo that you wear and the logo on that polo. Elwin has certainly worn several polos in his career. He has coached at 14 different colleges in his almost 25 years of coaching college basketball. So has had a tremendous wealth of experience. And along with that experience comes obviously a tremendous wealth of knowledge. And we really have a great conversation, honest, open conversation about the coaching profession, the things that are really challenging about it, how he's navigated all those moves with his family, how he's navigated that personally, how he's tried to quickly come in and fit in with staffs, and really, like I said, just a really great, open, honest dialogue about his experience in the coaching profession as a whole. Just as a precursor, we recorded this March 10th, which is actually before everything went down to the level it is now with the coronavirus, before everyone was on quarantine. So obviously, our conversation probably would have had a different tone if we had recorded it after. But it does put things in perspective. Today is March 26th, and just 16 days ago when we recorded this, none of what's going on today was happening, so at least in America. So with that being said, we hope you enjoy this conversation. I think there's a ton of great value and lessons to be taken from it. Please subscribe, write us a review, and please follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. Before we jump into today's podcast, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Rising Coaches membership. Obviously, right now with coronavirus running rampant through the world, everyone is forced to take a break and be quarantined and sit at home, which is not usual for college basketball coaches. We're trying our best to fill that void and provide value through that time. And we're doing that through our live film sessions, which we're doing daily at this point, every day at 2 Central. We have a different coach coming in and speaking to our group. We're also doing some live networking events, which is open to the public. But the membership is really, we try to provide that type of value and that type of connection year-round, regardless of the global pandemic that we're all facing. We have a program called Two Coaches a Month, where we pair you up with another coach on the first and 15th of each month. And even when you're in the midst of your season and you're in basketball bubble, it kind of holds you accountable to getting out and meeting people outside of your circle. We also try to provide tremendous content. We think we do a great job of that. But to me, as always, the real value is in the connection piece and, you know, our ability to help you create genuine relationships with other people in the profession. So we hope you consider joining Rising Coaches. It's $120 for the year, $10 a month. You can find out more information at risingcoaches.com, and we hope you join us. Elwin, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing well, Adam. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. Thanks for being on the podcast, man. This one's been a long time coming, so we appreciate you jumping on with us.
Oh, man, I've been waiting a while to be on. Anyway, I can help. You know, I like talking, so I'm good with it.
Yeah, no, we're excited. I want to run down your resume real quick. Usually with our guests, we kind of go step by step and talk about the different stops and the different moves and decisions that they've made in their career. But you've got too many to go through. We'd be on here for 3 hours.
I was going to say, people are going to get some coffee and donuts for that one.
Yeah, yeah. But I do want to I do just want to read it off so that our listeners get a little reference for the journey that you've had. starting in 1997, Butler Community College, 98 to 2000, Independence Community College, 01 to 02, Redlands Community College, 02 to 03, Frank Phillips, 03 to 05, Southern University, 05 to 06, Northwood, 06 to 08, Georgia Southern, 08 to 10, Arkansas State, 2010 to 2011, Iowa State, 11 to 12, Hutchinson Community College, 12 to 13, Stillman, 13 to 14, Texas Pan Am, or I guess now it's Texas Rio Grande, 13 to 14, Coppin State, 14 to 17, Washington State, and 19 to present. That's not right. When did you get to Coastal
No.
Carolina? I'm on your
Well,
Wikipedia
not.
page, so fill in the gap from 17 to now.
Well, it was 14 to 17, was Coppin. I was there for 3 years.
Got it.
And then 17 to 19 was Washington State. And then 19 to present is Coastal Carolina.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that. I apologize. Someone's got to update the Wikipedia page. So, any listeners, type in and fix that for us. So, it's been quite a journey, and we'll get into lots to talk about here. But obviously, you started off at the JUCO level, which you played at the JUCO level as well. But what has that JUCO coaching experience done for you in terms of getting you ready, and in terms of career, especially at the start of your coaching journey?
Well, I mean, for me, starting off at the junior college level, I mean, it just taught me how to grind, because I mean, when I started out back in '97, I mean, I was fresh out of college, playing at Cleveland State, went to Butler County to work for, my mentor, who was Steve Vett, who I played for in high school, and I mean, my gummy dude like a second dad to me, but I mean, it just taught me how to grind. Having to drive places, figuring out how to recruit, because at that time in Kansas, you only had six out-of-state scholarships and they were partials. So how you won in Kansas was you had to recruit in-state kids, you had to recruit Kansas kids. And I'm gonna tell you what, man, it was unbelievable. You go to a game and it would be, you got 19 JUCOs in Kansas and it would be 10, 11, 12 JUCOs at one game recruiting the same kid. So you had to grind. I mean, because it was like high major recruiting, for Kansas kids that are, low majors, D2 guys, but you had to have them in order to win. So that's what it did for me. Being a JUCO really taught me how to grind.
Okay, you touched on something that I want to jump into. You're sitting there, you're recruiting a kid. Like you said, there's 11 other schools recruiting the same kid. The game ends, they go to the locker room, and you guys are all kind of floating around waiting to talk to the kid. I used to feel like an idiot in those situations. Like, man, this kid doesn't want to talk to me. He's just talked to 10 other dudes that said the same thing. Like, what is your strategy? What are you saying to the kid in that moment? Obviously, if you already have a relationship, it's a little different. But if you're just kind of going for the first or second time, and you guys aren't tight like that, what is your strategy there?
Man, you would hope that the other guys there, like if you were the JUCO that kind of traveled the furthest, I mean, because Kansas, I mean, it's not a small state. It's not like you can get every place in an hour or two, I mean, for the most part, I would just, if I drove the furthest, then I would want to try to be the first one to talk to the kid so I could get on the road and get home, if I got a 3.5, 4 hour drive. Now if I was 20 minutes away or whatever, I'd wait till, the last one and, talk to the kid and, just kind of BS with the kid and so forth. But I mean, really just try to find other people there to, talk to that might be involved with the kid or, might be friends of the kid because, the parents are there usually or the high school coach or, a girlfriend or something like that. So just try to find other people to kind of mill around with and not sit around there twiddling my thumbs, looking lost, while other coaches are talking to the young man.
There is that like coaching etiquette thing where like you kind of see who goes first, who's going to go last. Usually some people are jockeying to go first or to be the last one to talk to the kid. Did you care at all? Like if it wasn't a distance, if distance wasn't a factor, were you one of those, you know, trying to get in the last word or the first word?
You know what? No, not really, man, because, you know, man, if you've been talking to the kids and stuff, you know, usually kids are going to come to you anyway. You know, if they know you or, you know, if you've been talking to them, they're going to come up to you anyway. So, I don't know, man. I mean, it changed every game. You know, I mean, sometimes, you know, you could get in there and be first or second or third, and sometimes you'd be the last one, you know. So, I mean, there was no pecking order. You know, I mean, for me, you know, because I worked at Butler and because I worked at Hutch, you know, Independence, I mean, I was fortunate enough to work at three of the better junior colleges in Kansas at the time. So that helped, too, you know, because make no mistake about it. Just like D1, that name on your polo make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, no question. I just asked because I always thought that was a funny dynamic after games, seeing coaches floating around waiting on a kid.
Yeah.
Okay, so when you do get your Division I assistant job at Southern's the first crack, I believe. Did you feel really prepared? I mean, I know you mentioned that JUCO taught you how to grind. Was there any other, you know, adjustment to that level, or did you feel like you had seen everything, done everything already?
No. I mean, I felt like I was prepared to be at the Division I level. What I didn't really understand or wasn't prepared for was how much different and how much harder, to be quite honest with you, it is to recruit at the HBCU level. You know, because it is different. You know, it's very different. You know, and you know, everybody ain't cut out for it because it's a tough level. You know, you got different levels of recruiting. You know, but when you have to factor in, you know, you're coaching at a HBCU. You know, I mean, the truth of the matter is, you know, there's not a lot of dudes playing AAU their whole life in high school basketball, you know, to go to HBCU. You know, it's just a fact of the matter, you know. So that was a little more difficult than what I had anticipated, to be honest with you. But, you know, once you, like any other school, once you find the advantages and the things that you can sell, you know, every school's got something you can sell. And, you know, I mean, I enjoyed my time, you know, immensely at Southern University, you know, which I think is one of the best HBCU situations you can go to. I mean, and living in Baton Rouge was great. So I just had to get used to it, you know, and I didn't grow up around, you know, HBCU university, so I didn't really know much about them. But like anything else, you figure it out.
Did you have, first of all, Baton Rouge, very underrated city. I love it there. Did you figure out any strategies, you know, or anything in particular that you tried to sell at the HBCU level? Or what do you look for? How do you narrow the pool or anything?
Yeah, well, part of recruiting, as you know, Adam, is, I mean, you got to figure out who you can get, you know. I mean, because there's a lot of kids you like, but you can't get them. You know, not because you're not doing your work, but just because of where you're at, you know. So the biggest thing was figuring out, identifying those players, you know, that were good enough, you know, because everybody wants to recruit players better than their level. You know, I'm trying to identify those players and then trying to figure out whether or not you can get them. You know, what end did you have and how does it, or why did it make sense for that kid to want to come to Southern University? You know, so, I mean, I'm going to tell you what. Homecoming at Southern University and the other HBCUs I've been to, second to none. That I can promise you. That's including Iowa State and Washington State. Homecoming are unbelievable. And I'm telling you what, if you can't get a kid to commit after homecoming, then that kid don't want to be at no HBCU anyway.
That's funny. Okay, so we mentioned all the different stops. So I just did a little quick math. I believe that's 15 schools in 25 years. Which is a lot. That's a lot of moving, and you have family, right? How has that been, juggling all those moves? Because this is reality. Like you're, you know, sometimes we have guests on here who do, you know, they coach, you know, and everyone's path is different, and that's fine, that's great. But some people, you know, get lucky and they come up in one program, they spend 7 years there, they make one move, and then bam, they get a head coaching job. The more common path is yours, where you are really having to be willing to move anywhere and make a lot of moves. And there's going to be moves that you want to make, moves that you probably didn't anticipate having to make. And it's a long, windy road. How did you manage that with your family, from a family aspect? How did you guys handle that?
Well, you know, man, like you said, everybody's path is different. And I look at coaching like a marriage. You know, I mean, everything one way doesn't work for everybody, you know, and you have to figure out what works for you, and not only in the profession, but also in your marriage. When my wife married me, I don't think she really knew what she was getting into. All right, so I tricked her, I guess. After about it was about the fourth, nah, about the fifth move in like 7 years, she was like, you know what? Because my wife is from Seattle, she was like, you know what? Me and the kids, we gonna go back to Seattle because I'm used to being stable. The kids need to be stable, and she was like, I know you gonna keep coaching, and if she don't know nothing else about me, she knew that. But they went back to Seattle, which has been a great move for them. That, you know, I mean, she's back there working, has a good job. You know, my kids are in very good schools back there. So the stability she wanted and needed, she's gotten. And for me, you know, you hate to say it, but a lot of times what you do becomes your identity. You know, that's just the truth of the matter, because the times that I have been unemployed, you know, I mean, you kind of lose a sense of your identity. And, you know, it's hard to figure out, you know, which, you know, it's almost kind of like being a professional athlete. When you're done playing, you got to figure out what to do next. And, you know, that's a hard thing to do sometimes. You know, a lot of times it is. So, you know, we figured out how to navigate that. You know, with me getting home, you know, I'm not gone for extended periods of time, but, you know, I got a paycheck coming in, bills got to get paid, so got to have a job. And that job probably isn't going to be in Washington. I was lucky to be at Washington State, you know, and be 4.5 hours from them. But for the most part, that job is probably going to be a pretty good distance away from them, given, you know, my regional ties and stuff like that. So, that's pretty much it, man. I mean,
I can't
be prepared to move though.
Yeah. I can't imagine how hard that is though. But like you said, you got to find what works for you and your family, and it's not going to be the same thing for everybody. So I'm glad you guys have found something. Sounds like your wife must be a strong, independent woman, and, you know, she's set in Seattle, and how often do you get to see them?
You know, obviously during the season, I don't get to get back very much, especially being in South Carolina now. But like here, I'll go back next week because I'm actually be out at the California JUCO tournament out there in Northern California, and then I'm gonna head up to Seattle for the day before I head to Hutch for the JUCO national tournament. So I'll get a chance to stop by, and I haven't been home since Christmas. I was able to get home, you know, for about 3 days during Christmas. So when we're not in season, yeah, I'll make the trip back out there. I'll probably, you know, probably twice a month, you know, for two or 3 days. You know, leave out on Thursday night and come back on Saturday, you know, Sunday night. It's easier coming west to east than it is east to west. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So they got red eyes coming back, you know, whereas going, you don't have red eyes.
Right.
So although you do gain 3 hours, so that helps.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. That's tough, man. That's makes your grind even tougher on paper, at least.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about, you know, the being ready to move. You just said it. You got to be ready to move whenever, wherever. You know, talk a little bit about that approach and you know, some of the moves you've made and the mindset behind them.
Yeah. Well, you know, given the profession that we've chosen to be in, because make no mistake, we've all chosen to be in this profession. You know, you got to understand that it is a business, you know. And a lot of times when you're not the one making the decisions, you know, you're the one having to, you know, make changes when you're not the one making decisions. So, you know, I think guys, you know, because I hear guys all the time talking about, you know, loyalty. Yes, loyalty is huge in this profession, you know. But the other thing that people have to keep in mind too is, you know, at the drop of a dime, you could be let go, and there doesn't have to be a reason for that, you know. So, you know, you gotta be prepared. And in my opinion, the way you stay prepared, and it's to protect yourself. The way you stay prepared is you've got a network, you know, you got a network, and not that you're looking. I mean, it's not that when you have a job, you're looking for the next job, but you've always got to have options. You know, it's no different than recruiting. You don't put all your marbles in one basket, recruiting one guy. I mean, you're recruiting 5, 6, 7 guys at the same position. And you know what? I look at the job just in that manner. You got to have options. Even if you don't choose to do those options, you got to have them, because you never know when you're going to walk in that office and your boss tells you, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to go a different direction. You know, you could be doing everything right, you know, and that day may come, you know, because if you haven't been let go yet, then you ain't been coaching long enough, you know, because it's going to happen. So I think the way you stay prepared just to protect yourself is you always have to have options. Not that you're looking for another job. You know, I don't want people to mistake that. You're not looking for another job, you know, but you have an option if something does happen that, you know, people know, hey, you know, well, Elwin, I mean, you know, shoot, man, he don't mind moving or whatever the case may be. But, you know, it's crazy to me because guys are like, you know, E, are you looking, man? You looking, man, look, I'm happy where I'm at. But you know what? I mean, if there's an opportunity that comes up, you know, and, you know, you get a chance to, you know, better your salary, you know, significantly, or it can get you back to your family, or it can get you back home or whatever, then of course I'm going to explore it. Why wouldn't I? You know, and if somebody wants to, you know, we talk about loyalty. If somebody wants to show loyalty to you as an assistant, then they're going to give you multi-year contracts. You know, there's not many multi-year contracts floating around, you know, but to me, you know, for a guy to ask you to show him loyalty, you know, and you on a year-to-year contract, okay, I feel you. I want to show you loyalty. You know, can you show me loyalty? You know, where's the multi-year contract? You know, because that's loyalty. That's called being, you know, you're protected. You know, because again, being let go can happen at any time, and in this profession, it ain't like they got to have a reason why they letting you go. You know, it might be because somebody else got another player that they want to hire. You know, it might be, you know, who knows? I mean, you might have said something that rubbed them the wrong way or something. You know, I mean, people are very finicky in this business. You know, and, you know, just my word of advice is just always be prepared. You know, it's just like people say, expect the unexpected. You know, you got to do that. And because if you're not ready when that time comes and you get caught off guard, I'll be the first to tell you, being in that unemployment line and having to fill out that paperwork every week to get your money, it ain't no fun when you don't know where your next job is coming from.
Why do you think there aren't more multi-year deals for assistant coaches? Even I mean, it doesn't have to be the BCS level where you're making six figures, but even a small school where you're there and you're working for a coach who's got 4 years left on her contract, and you're working year to year as an assistant. That's not right, is it? Do other industries work like that?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, I wish that was something that was talked about more, you know, because I can guarantee you, when you feel secure and feel stable as an assistant coach, you can do your job that much better. You know, when you don't have to worry about, you know, well, you know, are we going to get let go at the end of the year, or am I going to get let go at the end of the year? I think it allows you to do your job that much better, you know, and I think it's something that should be talked about more, even at the lower levels, you know. I mean, shoot, man, why not give assistant coaches, you know, multi-year contracts? I mean, even if it's not the whole staff, you know, I don't know if people would ever do that. You know, I mean, a guy that's, you know, that's been there, a guy that's, you know, whatever, your top assistant or, you know, whatever. I mean, why not have him with a multi-year contract? You know, we all looking for security.
Yeah, no question. Have you ever broached those topics with your head coach or your athletic director?
No, because I haven't been there long enough to approach it. <You know? laughs> But I do think it's something that needs to be talked about, you know, in our circles. And, you know, you would hope, you know, that you can get with a head coach or get with a guy who would go to bat for you, you know, because we all need somebody to speak for us, because we're not always privy to those conversations.
Right.
You know, so I just think it would be for our profession, I think it would help it immensely with guys, you know, being secure, do it, and being able to do their job better, you know, because when you got a family, you don't want to be living year to year.
I wonder how that would affect the flip side is, like, if you want to take a job after a year and got an opportunity to advance yourself and you're still under contract, I wonder, you know, how that would affect you as the employee.
Well, and you know, I mean, hey, you know, it's give and take. You know, to me, if you want something like that, then, you know, if you're under contract, you know, then you should honor that contract. And I mean, the bottom line is, you know, just like, if that's something we want as assistant coaches, then we also have to be prepared where if you do breach that contract, you know, there's got to be a penalty. You know, I mean, 80s and schools and 80s draw up contracts for everything else. I mean, why wouldn't they be able to draw up a contract? You know, hey, if you breach the contract, you have to pay back that year's salary that you're forfeiting, or, you know, whatever the case may be. You know, not something that's astronomical where, you know, you go broke.
Right. A year's salary. Damn.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean.
No, I know what you mean. No, I know what you mean. Yeah, there's got to be some financial stipulation.
Repercussion for breaching the contract. So I get that. But, hey, I'd be willing to do that because, again, I'm more interested in the security of being someplace, you know, for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years than I am looking for the next job.
Right. Well, and it's not that's not a bold or disrespectful conversation to have with your boss or your AD. Now, it's easy for me to say this because I'm not in coaching right now and I don't have a boss that I got to go to have that conversation. But it shouldn't be, you know, taboo to talk about that. Like, that's a very valid conversation to have, in my opinion. Just because it's like the industry norm not to have that doesn't mean it's right.
Right. No, not at all. You know, and again, you know, people, I wouldn't say think it's taboo. It's just something that's not really discussed, you know, because it's not the norm.
Right.
You know, but I tell you this, if I was the head coach and I'm out here trying to hire staff, first of all, usually people aren't hiring very many people they don't know. That's first off. So if I'm a head coach, my thinking would be when I'm putting a staff together is I want this staff to be comfortable, you know, in terms of where they're at, in terms of, you know, their living situation, all that. So my philosophy would be, if my staff is comfortable, they're going to work harder because they're going to feel secure. So I would find a way, you know, to try to approach it with my AD, like, hey man, you know, what can we do in terms of, you know, multi-year contracts, you know, even if that means lesser pay, you know, by a little bit, you know, I would rather have, you know, the security for me again, you know, hey, 2-year contract, you know, $75,000 a year. All right. I mean, I think most people would be okay with that.
Right.
You know, to know that you're guaranteed to be someplace for at least 2 years.
Yeah, that's rare. Rare to have that peace of mind.
Yeah.
You talked about how you always got to be ready. You never know what's going to happen. And the way you stay ready is you network. What does that look like for you? Are you just kind of going out of your way to talk to people when you're on the road? Or do you have a system that ensures that you connect?
I think networking is being genuine. You know, I mean, I like to think of myself as a people person. I mean, even if I wasn't in a profession, I'm talking to people. You know, I mean, I don't think it's out of your way to say hello. You know, I don't think it's out of your way to, you know, just strike up, you know, conversation. You know, I mean, not BS conversation, but, you know, just genuine conversation. You know, I mean, you go to some of these events, man, and, you know, guys be sitting by you, you know, don't say nothing, like, dude, like, what's up? You know, I mean, we all kind of in this thing together, you know. Networking, man, I mean, staying in touch with the people you met, you know, I mean, by text and phone call. You know, back when I started out, you wrote letters, you know, and put it in the mail and all that stuff. But, I mean, now with text and, you know, everything else, I mean, it's easy to network now. I mean, it's Instagram, Twitter.
Right.
You know, I mean, all that other stuff. You know, so, no, I just think networking is, if that's who you genuinely are, I think networking is easy, you know, because it's a trait you have. You know, and to me, if you're a recruiter, you probably got that trait anyway.
Right.
You know, so I just don't think it kills me to see guys out here, you know, they be all to themselves and, you know, like they too good to talk and say, hey, man, you can go ahead on with that stuff.
Right.
I ain't got time to be fooling with you. Feel like you're doing something that somebody else ain't doing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. You see people who are sometimes try to be secretive and sly. But some people just have genuine, like, anxiety over social situations, and it's hard for them to just to strike up a random conversation.
So, I mean,
it seems like it would be a tough job for you if that's what you deal with, but there's other ways you can kind of find your niche, you know, whether it's X's and O's or whatever.
I tell you what else is funny, too, about that thing. It's amazing how many more people, and I've gone through this, so that's why I'm saying it. It's amazing how many more people talk to you based off the name of your polo.
Oh, no question.
you know, I'll tell you what, that is the funniest thing, you know. I mean, because everybody want to talk to you when, you know, you at that high major level, you know, or that real good mid-major level. But when you at a low major level, I mean, people that you talked to before when you was, you know, at a high major, you know, they act like they don't know you. They, you know, whatever the case may be, I find that to be funny, too. You know, I find it to be sad, actually.
Yeah, it is. So, you know what? We've talked about this before. I think you got to take advantage of that. Like, if you are lucky enough to get a recognizable logo on your polo, like, you really should do some things to take advantage of that momentum or that attention or whatever, even though it is BS that people act like that. Like we talk about this all the time. You know, I went from Central Florida Community College to Clemson to Northern Colorado. So I was at a really good school sandwiched by two smaller levels. And we started Rising Coaches when I happened to be at Clemson. I don't know that it would have taken off if I had tried to do it from College of Central Florida or Northern Colorado. You know, the fact that it was the ACC gave us some, I'm doing air quotes here. I don't know why I always do air quotes on the podcast, but, you know, I don't know why, because we were at some big big high level school that made it more valuable, but that's perception, and perception is reality.
Yeah. No, you do. I mean, if you can ever catch that wave, you got to try to ride it as long as you can, because you never know how long it's going to last. I mean, when I went from Arkansas State to Iowa State is when I was a part of, at the time, the Black Coaches Association, the BCA. They had an event that's kind of like your – what's the new event now where they have the quote-unquote top assistant coaches attend the seminar with ADs and stuff?
They got a few. They got the College Coaching Consortium. They got the Turnkeys got their thing in Vegas. There's two chairs. There's about four or five. It used to be Villa 7, right, was the big one?
Yeah, it used to be Villa 7, yeah.
Now there's about four or five of them.
Okay, but the BCA had – it was like – the rise in minority coaches or something like that. But anyway, when I was going to Iowa State, I was part of that, and obviously a big reason, probably was because I was, going to the BCS level. The group that I was with at the time I was there, it was myself, it was Kareem Richardson, it was Orlando Vandross, Kareem's at Indiana State now, Orlando Vandross is at Virginia. It was what's the guy's name? Can't remember. He ended up being a head coach at Tennessee State.
Dana?
We had another
Dana Ford?
No, not Dana Ford.
John
Travis.
Cooper. Who is it?
No, it was Travis.
Travis. Williams. Yep, Travis Williams. Yep.
Travis Williams. Then we had another guy, Lamonte Stone, who was at Bowling Green. I think he's coaching high school now. And then the last member of the group was the guy that was at Long Beach State who actually passed away. I can't remember his name. But anyway, it was six of us. And I mean, it was, like you said, you got to ride the wave. I mean, I don't know if I ever would have got that, had I not been going to Iowa State.
Right, right. And you're the same dude you were 6 months before when you were at Arkansas State.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But it's crazy. It's crazy how perception, people have this perception that, just because you're at this, high major school, that, you're elite or whatever the case may be.
Right, right. Let's talk about this a little bit. Like, when you do make a move and you are only there at a school for 1 or 2 or 3 years, how do you assimilate, do you have any strategies to, like, get assimilated and acclimated to a new staff, a new school, new community quickly?
I think the best way you get acclimated, man, to me, I never approach a situation and go in there like I, like you know it all or you the best thing since sliced bread. You're the newcomer. So to me, you need to go in there with the openness and willingness to adjust, because I've joined a new staff a majority of the time, so they've already had things kind of going. You fit in, by figuring out how they do things. And if you can integrate some things that could help, then, you pick and choose your time to do that. I don't have you got some dudes that go into a situation like they know everything. Like, whoa, my man, slow your roll. We know what we doing too. When you go someplace, man, just fit in. Do your thing when there's opportunities that, you can maybe enhance what's going on in that program, then you take your opportunity to do it. That's my opinion anyway.
Do you look to, talking about enhancing like programs in certain areas, is there something specifically you like to focus on in that regard when you go to a new situation? Or are you just trying to like really focus on bringing in a great recruiting class, coaching the guys you got, helping on the court? Or is there anything off the court program wise that you try to, take pride in?
Well, I wherever I go, because I've been to a lot of different places. I've taken something from each stop that I've been at, or I've learned, I'm at the point now, now when I go to a job, it's not so much I'm learning something new, is more so I'm learning what not to do, so, I just wherever I can help out, whether that's, you know, in recruiting, whether that's, you know, in the office, whether that's on the floor, whether that's, you know, in the community or whatever, because, you know, I mean, like I said, I like to get out and meet people and just talk and network. You know, man, you just try to show the new staff that you're with, you know, that you're valuable, you know, that you're, no job is too small for you to do. You know, I mean, you know, heck, man, when I went to Washington State, you know, I wasn't on the road recruiting. You know, I was basically a recruiting coordinator, but I wasn't on the road. You know, so, I mean, I helped out the managers, man, you know. Yeah, I mean, some guys, not some, a lot of guys think they get to a place where they're too big to do anything. You know, man, just show people that, you know, there's no job that's too small for you not to do. Like, you know, you're not above, you know, anybody else. If you can help out, you can help the managers out, help the managers out. I don't care how long you've been in the profession. You know, if you got to carry some bags to help out or, you know, order the food or whatever the case may be, then, I mean, do it. I mean, because it's about the program. You know, it ain't about you. It's about the program. How can you help the program?
Elwin, what's next for you? Like, what's ultimate three-year goal, or what's the ultimate goal, period, in the profession? You know, back to the BCS level, head coach at a, you know, what level are we talking? What's the goals?
You know what, man? The first goal is, I mean, I want to be a head coach again. Yeah, you know, I mean, I had one opportunity when I went to Frank Phillips to be a head coach. I mean, there's nothing like running your own program. You know, and at this stage in my career, I mean, I feel like I'm as capable as anybody else of running a program, you know, being a head coach. Secondly, man, is, you know, I mean, just the stability part, you know, I mean, having 15 jobs and 24 years of coaching, you know, man, I mean, I like to grind, but man, at some point I like to, you know, just kind of be able to chill too and, you right. know that I'm going to be here for a while. You know, but so, you know, being stable, you know, finding the stability. Obviously, the BCS level is a great level to be at. I mean, the perks are unbelievable, you know, but that's not my goal. I mean, I want to get some place where they care about winning. You know, they give you what you need to win. You have some support. And just, you know, generally where people care, you know, and it doesn't have to be the BCS level. You know, that's not my goal. You know, I mean, if I was just starting out, you know, I remember that used to be my goal. Like, man, I want to get to the, you know, to the BCS level. And that's not my goal anymore. I mean, hey, if I get back there, great. But I mean, if I don't, I'm cool with that too. Like, you know, Coastal Carolina is a great situation. You know, I mean, it's on the beach, you know, weather's nice. I mean, I'm from Kansas, and I don't know if I can take the cold anymore being in Myrtle Beach. Right. You know, I've gotten spoiled. But, you know, man, I mean, I work for a legendary coach, you know, with Cliff Ellis. You know, he's a dude that lets me get out and work. You know, I mean, shoot, if I could be a Coastal for 10 years, I would, you know. But we'll see. We'll see what the future holds. And obviously the most important thing is, you know, to be with my family, you know. So it would be nice to get back closer to them, you know, because my girls are getting older and, you know, would like to be able to attend their events more frequently. So, you know, that plays a part too. That's a bigger part than even the money, you know, and as it should be. But if I could ever get closer back to my family, you know, that outweighs everything.
Elwin, what advice would you give, you know, to young guys trying to get started, break in or move up in the profession?
Man, stay humble, stay hungry. You know, you gotta, you know, be genuine. You know, you don't have to be somebody you're not. You know, and network. I mean, because you never know where that break may come. You know, and more than likely, you know, I see a lot of guys today, man, that, you know, they think they should be hired right into a coaching role right away. Nah, that's not the way it works, man. There's a lot of people trying to get in this profession. And it's hard. It's hard. You know, don't discredit any level. You know, I mean, if you can get in at the JUCO level, get in at the JUCO level. you can get in at Division II, Division III, you know, then do it and then work your way up, you know. But I see a lot of guys that are just hung up on, oh, I want to be in D1. I mean, I hear you, but that may not be your path right now. You know, you may have to detour before you get to that. So I would just say keep your options open. Stay hungry, stay humble.
Thanks, Ellen. Where can people follow along with what you're doing? Obviously, they can follow along the Coastal Carolina program, yeah, but if they want to follow you.
I'm on Twitter. Hell, I forgot my Twitter account, but I think it's at Coach McRoy on Twitter, and then I'm on Instagram. I forgot what that is, too. I think it's just Elwin McRoy. Those are the two places, man. I mean, if you see me out, don't be a stranger. You know, give me a holler. Yeah, I'm good to talk with anybody. You know, I'm a cool, down-to-earth dude. You know, and I don't care what level you at. I don't look at the name on your polo to decide if I'm a speaker.
Elwin, thanks so much, man. We appreciate it.
Man, no problem. I enjoyed being on, Adam. And, you know, hey, good luck to everybody as we end this postseason here. I'll see some people out on the road getting it done. On the grind, baby. I'm in Kentucky right now.
I love it. Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Crazy to think that this was recorded just 16 days ago on March 10th. Obviously, Elwin is not out on the road, and he will not see you recruiting as everyone is in quarantine. And our thoughts and prayers are with Elwin and his family, who's in the Washington area, and hopefully they're safe, as we know they got hit hard with the coronavirus. Again, just crazy to put things in perspective that just 16 days ago, you know, life for the basketball community was normal. And we were gearing up for postseason and recruiting. Anyways, I hope everyone stays safe. And please follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com.